Hello, and welcome to another episode of the UHT Student Theatre Podcast. My name is Gab, and I'm here today with MJ. And today we are going to ask each other some questions and give each other some answers. Are you ready, MJ?
Sure am. Before we get started, we want to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on the lands of First Nations people of Australia. I'm on the lands of five different tribes of the Kulin Nation, and we acknowledge the elders of these lands, and we acknowledge the continuing contribution they make to the life of this region and this country. Sovereignty was never ceded.
All right, well, let's get started. So tell me, MJ, what's a dream show you'd like to make?
Great start off question, Gab. I think it's really exciting. I have generally made my practice by, I really like classic texts, and I like giving them to new writers and then making new adaptions that are sort of set within really interesting worlds. And I think I still, for a long, long time, have had this idea. I've never touched Hamlet because it's like such a thing within the canon of, you know, like Western theater practices. But I feel like, oh no, I'm going to do it wrong, or I'm going to upset someone, and or upset someone in a way that I didn't mean to. And so I think I'm just trying to work out exactly what it is that I want to do. But at the moment, I think the one thing I definitely want to do is I want to make Hamlet without Hamlet and see what that play looks like. If you just remove the sort of titular character who causes all these problems and is sort of the pressure point for all of these key elements in the text, I think it's just really unique to go, okay, well, what if we just take him right out of the text? What does the play look like then? And like, what does it even mean? I think those are like the kinds of questions that excite me. So in terms of a dream play, it's like Hamlet, but not Hamlet.
But when you say removing Hamlet, do you mean like, are you going for like a Lord of the Rings vibe where like, you know, you've got the ever-present Sauron yet no actual Sauron? Like, is that the vibe you're going for? Or
I think so. I think it's kind of like in my head at the moment, it would be exactly that. We have the character of Hamlet that the other characters talk about and interact with at times, but the actual character themselves isn't there. There's a there's a really famous comic strip called Garfield Without Garfield, where they go through all of the Garfield comics, but they have edited the actual cat out of every single one. And it just means it's kind of this story of John being insane. You know, and talking to himself and just being really lonely and foolish. And it I don't know, it touches on a lot of things that I think is the same kind of idea that once you take that Hamlet out, what do the rest of the characters seem like?
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds interesting. I'd love to see it one day.
Well,
you'll have to let me know when you put it on.
Yeah, I will. I'll send you a text.
Thank you.
My question for you, I've got it. I found a way to put it. Who are your favorite artists, theatre or otherwise? I think I'm especially interested in the otherwise.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes. I mean, the problem is that some of my favorite artists are everyone else's favorite artists, like, you know, like Angela Lansbury and stuff like, exactly. Who else? I am a really big fan of Anthony Warlow. You know, I mean, like, he's always been an amazing singer, even after he was able to bounce back from his battle with cancer and stuff. And like, I mean, he's just got an amazing voice. Like, I wish I had a voice like that. Otherwise, who else? I mean, oh, it's a difficult one. He's not an otherwise, he's a theatre-based, you know, Antonin Artaud. Theatre of Cruelty is just, I find it so abstract, and I just love it. And, you know, only, unfortunately, he suffered quite a bit throughout his life, but only he could think of something so very, I guess, just so weird, so assaulting. It's literally assaulting the senses, and that's, yeah, that's what I really liked about Theatre of Cruelty and Artaud. And then there are there's just so many to pick from, I guess.
That is a fascinating roster of three particular artists. Do you think there's anything that ties them together or a reason why you like those?
I think they just, their fields are so different that there is nothing that ties them together, nothing whatever. It's just that they're so different and they sort of personify the sections of the performing arts that I enjoy. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Now, my next question for you, MJ, is do works of art always reflect their maker?
You know, every time you've asked me a question, two questions now, both times I've said, it's a good choice of questions. I think not necessarily. I think especially within like the context of theater, where art is so collaborative, and there's so many elements that are going on, I feel like sometimes the art isn't necessarily the result of the person who made it, but more their interaction with the underlying groundwork of the art. I suppose in that way, then I am saying that, yeah, it is. So actually I changed my response. I think it at the end of the day, the artist has to interact with the art in one way or another. Even if, you know, we think about say like an actor who's just being told what to do by a director, right? That's how some directors work and that's how some actors work. They just like to be told. So let's say you imagine a situation like that. No matter what, that actor has to put something onto that character and they bring a part of themselves, either visually or vocally, that kind of defines how that character performs. Or if we take an object, like a props maker making a fish, you know, like there's certain brushstrokes and attitudes about color and making and audiences that go into the making of that fish that come from the philosophy of that props maker that sort of results in this final product. So I think no matter what, the artist themselves has to input something onto the artwork. So it's representative of them, but just maybe not in the way that we would first think. There can be an artist who perhaps makes a play that is generally regarded to be, you know, they could make a misstep or they could make a play that doesn't make the message that they wanted to get across. And I think in those cases, then the art definitely doesn't represent the artist, but there are elements of that artwork in which the artist can be found within.
I guess so. So what you're saying is it's basically just one big crucible of everyone's visions and
I think that's what I like about theatre is the chaos of it, the messiness that all gets put together. For you, how do you structure your creative process?
If there is ever any when I work. just joking. No. Okay, how do I structure my creative process? How I normally do it is I usually start by thinking on what do I want to achieve? And then once I've decided what I want to achieve, that's actually when I go and find the performance I want to put on. I find that's how I do it. And then I go about looking at what other people have done and what they haven't done. And I normally like to do what people haven't done because it makes my work, even if it is using a performance that's already, you know, tried and true, I want to put my own touch on it and I want it to appear, it needs to be new in another sense to what everyone else has done. And then, so once I've sort of decided then I go about thinking about how I'm going to sort of manifest this on paper. Not paper, on the stage, same thing. Mm-hmm. It needs to work on paper and it needs to work on stage. So I guess, yeah, that's what I do. And then I get my team together and make the magic happen, or close to.
When you say, when you find something that you want to work on, do you mean like a philosophy, or do you mean like, you know, you're like, man, I want to make a play about pirates, and then you go and find a text about pirates? Or is it, could be either?
I guess, well, I mean, the thing is, I'm currently doing this at the moment. So I've recently started a student theatre group with UHT, Universal Savoyards. We specialise in Gilbert and Sullivan and modernising their work. And I had decided I want to put on a modern, it started with me saying, I want to put on a more modern version of one of Gilbert and Sullivan's known but lesser known works. And that's when I came across Iolanthe, which is what we aim to put on next year, everything permitting. I sort of think about what I want to achieve, and then I go out and find something.
That's really fascinating.
Now, for your next question, all right. What are three words you wish people would use to describe your work?
Engaging is one that I think is really important for me. I feel like when it comes to like the theatre that I put on, I kind of want it to be, I want you to be enjoying it the whole time. I think audience focused, those are two words, but I definitely think, I want it to be a work that an audience can engage with, that they can talk about, that they can, I make a lot of work that's like people where it feels like a gig is kind of the sensation that I like to give it. So it feels like you can yell and scream and interact with the performance as it goes on and really experience that liveness. Live, that would have been the term that I think I should have used rather than audience focused. So engaging, live, and young. I think I like my work to feel like it's for younger generations, you know, like anywhere from 16 to 25.
Oh, right.
Just like the youth, especially like at the moment where so many of us feel, I think, a little kept out of the industry at the moment because it's hard for us to find the economic stability that we need in order to make work. I think I'm really focused on sort of supplying that work for an audience that really doesn't feel supplied to at the moment.
And I mean, the youth are the future. So
that's exactly it. The youth are also me. I like to make work for me. That's probably the real truth.
I can understand that.
So I think those are the three words that I wish that people would think about my work. Your next question, what should a rehearsal room feel like?
All right. Okay. So how would I put this best? A rehearsal room needs to feel coordinated, yet it needs to feel energetic and fun. Because ultimately you want to get the best out of your actors. Yet on one hand, if it's all too, you know, fun and gamesy, nothing gets done. And then you've got you're not going to have the greatest show for audiences. But if you, how would I put this? But at the same time, if it's too coordinated and too stringent and, too regimented, people don't enjoy it. Your actors don't enjoy it. And that also reflects on the performance, and then your audience doesn't enjoy it and they say, what a bad show, yada yada yada. But Yeah, it's about finding that balance between structured and enjoyable. Mm. And I feel like when you find that balance, you get the best out of your actors. And and then it reflects on their performance and your audience love it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think even extending that all the way through to like the design stage, even in terms of ensuring that like your interactions are exactly that. They're that mix of open and fun and like structured, and there's got to be the train has to be moving forward.
Yes. Yeah.
Great response.
All right. Well, MJ, my next question for you is, what is risk in the context of theatre?
For me, I think risk definitely falls directly under I think it just equates, for me, especially in the current context, to financial risk.
Mm. Yeah.
In terms of, we kind of have an idea at this point as to what it is that Australian audiences like to see. Mm. Or not necessarily every Australian audience, but the current theatre-going audience.
Yeah.
So because of that, we can program, we can develop, we can deliver shows that we know are going to make a certain profit, that we know are going to bring back those same audiences, and we know are going to remain consistent.
Yeah.
And I think for me, risk entails putting on shows that we don't yet know can be successful, or we don't yet know that there is a market for.
Yeah.
I think a really good example of this is Fangirls by Eve Blake. I think Fangirls as a musical is like it's a show that is really clearly designed for young kids, and not in a way that is, you know, like a school education programming. It really is designed for kids to come and enjoy and see themselves on stage.
Yeah.
I think Belvoir and ATYP and all the producers on those shows really took a big leap of faith. To tour it around the country, hoping that they can bring in those audiences that you wouldn't usually see.
Yeah.
I think Counting and Cracking's another example of a risk. That's two from Belvoir. Good job, Belvoir. You're right. Yeah, I feel like shows where you kind of just can't, you're not sure that they're going to land with an audience. So shooting outside of your subscriber base, I feel like every indie show that's ever been made is a risk. For me, that's what defines risk. Doing something that you're not sure is going to return profit to you, but you're doing it because you know it's worth it.
All right. But do you have any sort of, what about the, aside from the financial risk, what about the risk of your artistic vision? And you know how some people might not appreciate it as you do.
In those cases, I suppose it is, it's always a risk when you, I feel like no matter who you are though, there's always a risk when you put work out there that you're going to be judged as a result of it. I think, you know, you may have a really unique artistic vision. You may be putting on the most upcoming post-dramatic multifocal, you know, you've got AV elements, you're putting it all in the bag in a way that audiences, you know, haven't really seen before, and maybe that they're not ready to see in terms of storytelling and narrative as we understand it today. But those cases, I think, align with what we understand to be financial risk. When you take an artistic risk, it often is an artistic risk is a financial risk in the same way.
Yeah.
So if you're willing to go out of your way and put down, you know, a show that you think is new and inventive and different, that your artistic vision that you're holding on to because you don't know if it's going to sell, or you don't know if it's going to be clear to audiences. You don't know if people are going to like it. I feel like that aligns with the risk that the producers are taking, that you're taking, or that the team is taking in profit share situations. Yeah. So I feel like for me, risk always ends up boiling back down to, at the end of the day, as much as I'd love to say theater is about art, it is essentially about profit. They're tied together, because the more people that come and pay to see your show, the more people who see and interact with your art.
Yeah.
So in that way, the two concepts are tied together.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Question number four. A bold one. Please don't be too cynical, or be as cynical as you like. I don't mind. What is it that you hate about theatre?
Everything. No, that's a joke. no. Okay. What do I hate about theatre? Okay. Well, of course, like, I mean, the cop-out is for me to say, you know, badly performed theatre. Like, if you've ever seen Waiting for Godot by Samuel Beckett, it's either done perfectly or it's done absolutely terribly. And yeah, it's just, I guess I hate when the interpretation is so off that it disrespects the playwright's own intentions and stuff. I feel like there needs to be a degree of deference that is given, but yeah, it's just that's one of those things. I guess the other thing I hate is that it's so expensive, because it is such an underfunded, under-resourced industry that it effectively barriers it. How do I put this? It bars itself to more participation and more. What else? Basically more participation and more audienceship, I guess. Unfortunately, it's also an elitist industry.
Aye.
Because if you want to put on a good show, you also need the best actors, the best musicians, best singers. And I believe that everyone has a talent, but you just need the perfect opportunity to use it. But unfortunately, the theatre industry doesn't work like that. It just wants the best, what it considers to be the best, not what is the best in every situation. And yeah, so unfortunately that happens. But my next question for you is, all right, final question, absurdism or realism?
I think absurdism for sure. That's 100% the way that I always go. I feel like realism, you know, what is realism? It's like always different depending on the time period, depending on who everyone is, depending on where you're aiming. And so for me, absurdism better captures what it is that it feels like to exist on Earth. And I think sometimes when we talk about realism in theatre, what we're actually talking about is like a realistic portrayal. And in that case, a realistic portrayal is always boring for an audience, because what you see isn't what something feels like. And the intention of theatre isn't to make people see, it's to make them feel. So in that way, I'm always really tied to absurdism over realism. I think it's a better way of communicating and clearing the air.
Yeah, well, MJ, as much as I'd love to keep asking questions, unfortunately, we have to wrap things up now. So thank you very much for your time today.
And that's all right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Gabby. You've been lovely to chat to.
Lovely. All right.
Hope to see you in a foyer somewhere.
Yes, hopefully. Yes.
All right. Adios.
Adios.